The Baseball Today podcast is presented by Travelocity. Travelocity's new top secret hotels makes Travelocity.com the best place for hotel deals. This is Baseball Today.
First and foremost, I'm a baseball player.
This was a funny game. It was a round ball that comes in a square box.
And then I ended up getting up and talking. I started to really get going, and I had to kind of cut myself off.
I know the fans are great. You know, this is where I wanted to be from day one.
Play ball!
Baseball Today.
Hi there, welcome to the Baseball Today. It's Monday, April 12th, 2010. I am Eric Carabel. You are listening to the show, Behind the Glass, Jay Soderberg. And first full weekend of baseball is done, and I thought it was pretty awesome, and I hope you did too. And I'm going to try to talk about it best I can here on this podcast. Coming up a little bit later, we'll get to the news, we'll get to your emails. The first power rankings of the season are just basically my opinion, and I'm sure you will have thoughts on that, which we can read on Tuesday's show. Still me flying solo, no idea when that'll change, so ask away, but I don't have answers. Let's start with Around the Diamond.
News from around the league.
Let's go Around the Diamond.
Honestly, shouldn't we just be happy there's a show and it's pretty good and people seem to like it and maybe it's still number one on iTunes, I don't know. But whatever the case is, let's just be happy for what we do have. And what we do have is Steven Strasburg and Aroldis Chapman pitching in the minor leagues. And I caught a little bit of Strasburg. I admit I did not get to see any of Chapman. But, you know, Sunday afternoon, kids, you know, I tend to do other things. Well, I was watching a Flyers-Rangers game, of course, and a little bit of the Phillies. But I knew Roy Halladay was going to go the distance and win because Houston's just awful. But anyway, Strasburg, by all accounts, including colleague Keith Law, said he looked really good. And his velocity is just what's amazing. I mean, he can hold his velocity through innings, and I mean, Strasburg's going to be special. Okay, now you know who he's facing, the Altoona curve. So who knows if any of those guys will be major leaguers or whatever again? But still, an encouraging first outing for both of them. Chapman had 9 strikeouts. Strasburg, I think, had 10. I don't know. I got to look that up. They both pitched well, and I mean, Strasburg was pitching 97-98 like every pitch. I mean, 5 innings, 4 hits, 4 runs. Did give up a couple runs. Only one of them was earned. 8 strikeouts. Still, I mean, watching him pitch, it's not so much about the results because, you know, somebody's going to get a hit, you know, and they swing blindly once in a while and they'll get some runs. But just it's an event. I'm not sure when his next outing is. But ESPN3, which is formerly ESPN 360, had it live on Sunday afternoon. So if you missed it and say, well, I couldn't watch it, well, you could have actually watched it. ESPN3 has a lot of live events, and they're pretty cool.
And if you'd like to watch it, it's still there at ESPN3.com.
That's right. It is still there at ESPN3.com, says Jay, and he's right. And I've already seen the Strasburg one, so I will probably watch the Chapman one a little bit later today when I'm done my real job. Other stuff going on. Let's talk about what happened on Sunday night. Chris Carpenter gave up 3 home runs. That wasn't real pretty. That's not what they expected. just so you know, Chris Carpenter gave up a total of 7 home runs all of last season. So is something wrong with Chris Carpenter? Well, my take on him has always been that, always for the last year or two, I guess, since he came back, is he would either be awesome or on the DL. I didn't see much in between. I also used to think that about Rich Harden, who, as we saw last year with the Cubs, was neither on the DL or awesome. Chris Carpenter giving up 3 home runs, and legit, not like, you know, patsy home runs, legit home runs, is kind of strange. Off to a bad start. Do I worry? No. Do the Cardinals need him? Yes and no. That division, to me, looks so kind of weak that I wonder if Chris Carpenter could have half the season he had last year, as long as Wainwright's good and as long as the bullpen's good. I think the Cardinals will still win that division kind of easily. I mean, it's the same thing, you know, I kind of think the same thing a little bit with the Phillies. You know, I mean, they didn't have a good closer. They had the worst closer season last year ever, all time, by pretty much every metric. They still made it to Game 6 of the World Series. Cole Hamels does not have to be good during the regular season for the Phillies to win the division. He has to be good in October for them to do anything in October. That's how I feel about that. Anyway, Cardinals, what an interesting game that was. It looked over. I thought it was over. My old friend Randy Wolf had a nice big lead. It was 7-2, and I thought, all right, this is easy. You know, bring in Villanueva and LaTroy and get this out. And then, you know, Pujols starts hitting home runs. And ninth inning, you know, Trevor Hoffman is not a guy who gives up home runs. But man, Pujols and Holiday hit some major home runs there. I don't think I'm worried about Hoffman. I don't think he's hurt. I just think, man, he has struggled so far this season. And then, of course, he gets the win, which, you know, doesn't deserve it. But Casey McGee with the walk-off home run off Kyle MacLellan, and nice win there. But I want to get back to Carpenter here. And actually, this is a pregame interview with Peter Pasquarelli. You remember him from ESPN Radio. And Chris Carpenter is the guest. And let's listen to what Pasquarelli and Carpenter talked about right here.
What was the difference this winter when you're basically conditioning, not rehabbing?
It was definitely a lot more fun. And, you know, just family-wise and kids and all that other stuff, where I was able to have a regular routine, a regular off-season, and not concern myself with having to go rehab my shoulder every single day.
Spring training, too, I would think you could work on specific things a lot more than just trying to see if you can get yourself ready.
The good thing about it was you work all winter to prepare yourself for the spring, and you let your mind get away from the game a little bit and get back into family life, and then when you come to spring training, you're not concerned about health. You're concerned about making sure that you get your work in, making sure that you get your stuff sharp and you get ready to go. And again, instead of having to concern yourself with every time you go out there, is there something going to hurt or am I going to be okay? And it was definitely a lot more fun and a lot more exciting for me than it had been the last few years.
At this stage of your career with such a record of success, do you still try to make adjustments in light of the fact that I'm sure hitters have studied you?
Absolutely. You got to continue to pitch, continue to try to get better, and continue to find a way to get better. And if you want to continue to pitch in this league, you got to make adjustments. And, we've got quality hitters all over this league. And if you don't continue to study and continue to try to get better and make it, those adjustments, they're going to get to you. And it's what makes it fun to pitch is going out and trying to execute pitches and keep them off balance.
Are the adjustments more in terms of maybe the patterns that you use rather than coming up with a new pitch?
Exactly. I'm not concerned about my stuff or new pitches. It's about going out and playing that cat and mouse game of what's going to come next.
You watch every day two guys in the middle of Pujols and Holiday, which is good as it gets, a 1-2, and you're facing one in Ryan Braun and Prince Fielder tonight. How do you approach when there's two such destructive hitters back-to-back? Is there a mindset of getting one of them out, or you just have to see what the situation is and go from there?
Yeah, I mean, you go into the game with a game plan, and you try to execute that game plan. It's not about who I'm facing or who I'm trying to get out. It's how many times can you hit that glove in a situation where you're trying to get those guys out. I have video and all that other stuff to study, and you go out with that game plan and you try to execute it. If you execute it, you got a good chance of being successful. If you don't, you got two guys over there that are going to hurt you.
And the ball club, do you have a good impressions first week?
I'm excited about our club. I think we got a great clubhouse. We got a great group of guys in here that come to the ballpark every day prepared. We got a good mix of veterans and young players. It's going to be a fun year.
Chris Carpenter, good luck the rest of the year.
All right, thank you.
All right, it's more of that, for those who've been listening for a couple of years, most of the interviews that Peter would do, there'd be a jinx, and the guy would, either come out and have his arm fall off or pitch poorly or, go 0-for-5 with 3 strikeouts, something like that. And again, we see that happening here with Chris Carpenter, who had probably, I don't know if he had an outing this bad last year. I didn't look it up. But obviously he is. He's excited about the club. It's a good team. It's the best team in the National League Central Division, I think, kind of easily. I think the Cardinals will have an easier time winning their division than the Phillies, than any team in baseball will have winning their division. How about that? I mean, I don't think the Phillies are so much better than the Marlins and the Braves as the Cardinals are in comparison to the Drek in their division. I mean, Cubs look awful. Brewers have many problems. Pittsburgh and Houston could be the two worst teams in baseball. We'll get to the power rankings later, and you'll see, I think, one of those teams in there. Not both, though. How about that? Anyway, Chris Carpenter, good interview there from our old friend. And let's get to some more news that's going on of the Nat. Jacoby Ellsbury left the Red Sox game in the ninth inning holding his left side. Rumor is the x-rays were negative. Maybe he misses a couple days. The opener today in Minnesota, by the way. And Ellsbury, I would be surprised if Ellsbury played. I would expect Jeremy Hermita. It is Red Sox Twins today, I believe. Yes, it is. So how about that? Anyway, what else happened? Which really announced his retirement. That's big news, 15 seasons. You know, we can mock this, and, you know, I kind of just did. But Rich Aurelia did something I don't think too many people are aware of, the accomplishment that he had. And you can say, oh, it's because he batted second in the order and Barry Bonds batted third that year. But do you people remember what Rich Aurelia did? I'm looking up the year right now on my computer when I'm not in Bristol, works fine, to see what he did, 97? I'm trying to think what year it was. Probably was later than that. But it was later than that. It was actually in 2001. Aurelia had 37 home runs, 97 RBI, batted 324, scored 114 runs, and led the league with 206 hits. That was because he batted ahead of Bonds, I think. I think he batted second ahead of Bonds. 941 OPS, career OPS of 762. So he didn't quite match that. The season after hitting 37 home runs, he hit 15. Later in life with Cincinnati, he had a 23 homer season when he was kind of a regular, and he batted 300. That was at age 34 anyway. He is saying goodbye, and hey, you know, it was actually a pretty good career for a guy who, back in the day, was probably supposed to be a utility guy when he first came up with the Giants. And then he became an all-star shortstop and got MVP votes. Anyway, goodbye to Rich Aurelia, and thanks for the memories. Yoan Santana got hit around on Sunday, which is not something I take particular joy in. I think if the Mets are going to have any semblance of a season, he needs to pitch well pretty much every time out. I mean, you can't give up five runs in the first inning. Not a good weekend for the Mets. And Nationals look improved to me. I'll tell you what, the Nationals can hit. I don't know if they can pitch. I don't think you're going to see too many Leivon Hernandez outings like that, but they can hit the ball. They took a game from the Phillies because they can hit the ball. Mike Leake made his major league debut. I think the last player to come straight from the college to the majors was Xavier Nady. Anyway, Leake for the Reds gave up seven walks, but only gave up one run. So I guess that's pitching well and well enough. And the Reds came back and won the game. Because the Cubs have no middle relief whatsoever. John Graybaugh and Esmaelen Caridad had awful weekends. Graybaugh was 0-2 now. Caridad gave up a grand slam the other day to somebody, I think, and blew a game. I mean, basically, they've got Carlos Marmol back there and nobody to set him up. Toronto off to a great start, 5-1. Casey Jansen, the reliever, the middle reliever, is 3-0. How about that? Not something you see every day where a middle reliever starts the year 3-0 in the first week. In their first six games, he has three wins. He's on pace for 81 wins. Nice series there for the Yankees, taking what I think it was 2 out of 3 against the Rays, and A.J. Burnett with a nice effort on Sunday. And Yankees, you know, I kind of view the Yankees a little bit like the Phillies. I mean, they can kind of do what they want this season. They can have losing streaks, winning streaks. They're just kind of better than most teams. The Phillies and the Astros are just terrible. And you know what? You can say it's because they're missing Lance Berkman, but it's more than that. They're just a terrible team, and they had no pitching after Roy Oswalt, okay? Their bullpen got slaughtered over the weekend. I mean, they had a winnable game on Saturday where they came back against Jamie Moyer, and then Brandon Lyon gets tagged, and Matt Lindstrom gives up another home run. And that's also stupid decisions they're making on the field. You know what? You signed Pedro Feliz to be your third baseman because he's one of the best defensive third basemen in all of baseball. Maybe he's the best defensive third baseman. Maybe he would be universally known as that if he hit a little bit more. I mean, I think right now it's probably Adrian Beltre who hits more than Feliz. Regardless, Pedro Feliz is on your team for a year because he's a great fielder. So naturally, you move him to first base on Saturday so Chris Johnson can play third. That's ridiculous. That takes away all the good of having Pedro Feliz on your team because he's not a hitter. He's not a very good hitter. And then he dropped a foul pop on Saturday. I was watching Saturday. Look, they lost games because they make dumb decisions. That's you know, that's not, I'm like a real rant, I guess. I mean, but I'm just saying, I mean, it just doesn't. And how about Corey Sullivan batting third in your order? That makes sense, too. That was yesterday. Well, that's why you lost. That's why you keep losing. I mean, Roy Alde, you know, is great. But anyway, Astros are 0-6. And, you know, I don't want to say they're going to be the worst team in baseball all season long because I think they have enough ability to beat that out. But that is not a team that's winning half its games. Not even close. Other stuff that I noticed, Scott Feldman, 17 wins last year, and he's off to a nice start this year, 2-7-8 games. How about the Diamondbacks? 13 innings in the fourth inning alone. The Astros have 13 runs all season long, and the Arizona Diamondbacks did that in the fourth inning alone against awful Daniel McCutcheon. And how about Chris Young? 3 homers, 11 RBI already. Pretty good. Chris Young is very talented. And the thing is, he hasn't taken a walk yet, and you're going to say, yeah, okay, well, how's he going to have a good season, Eric, if he does that? You always talk about walks. But he also has, he's not really striking out. He's only got 3 strikeouts so far. So if Chris Young of the Diamondbacks can avoid striking out a ton, even if he doesn't walk, I would say pretty good. The Mariners, Milton Bradley, again, at the minute Milton Bradley was dealt to Seattle, you know, And I remember we did this with Seth Everett. I mean, we talked about, you know, destroying a clubhouse. And he said, you don't destroy clubhouses. Now, one guy can't do it. And I kind of agree with that. I don't know why I said what I said, but the point is, Milton Bradley's just a bad guy. All right? He is less than a week into his season with Seattle. And a TV camera caught an obscene finger gesture. I think you know the one. And obviously it was the first Bradley incident in his Mariners career. And there's going to be more. And anyway, come on. How do you think this is going to end? You think it's going to end well? It's not going to end well. Closer news, Mike Gonzalez is probably out as the Orioles closer. I don't know who's going to be their closer if they get a safe chance. But an awful schedule for them in April. They could literally be like 7-20 in April. I would assume Jim Johnson is the new Orioles closer. The Rangers, how about Frank Francisco? Bad first week for him. Neftali Feliz, just a kid. Bad first outing, great in the next two. I think he struck out four of the last six guys he faced. He is the Texas closer. And you know what? He may not give that up. And you'll see a blog from me today on ESPN.com discussing that very fact. Neftali Feliz could be just a monster. Could be just awesome. You know, he probably should be a starting pitcher. But Texas has some depth there. And they've decided to put him in the bullpen. And I think that's going to be a big key. Because Frank Francisco, you know, he was okay last season, but he had help from C.J. Wilson, who's now in the rotation. And he was also on the DL at least, what, three times. Anyway, I think Neftali Feliz could be a really good closer. Speaking of closers, Brad Lidge was awful in his rehab start at Single-A Clearwater on Saturday. You can read into that what you will. I think Ryan Madsen could get 30 saves this year for the Phillies, and it wouldn't make much of a difference, but it would help their depth if they had a little bit more there. All right, that's it for the news. Let me just see if there's anything else here that I missed that's of great import that I want to get to, and I don't really see anything here. Cliff Lee, encouraged by his 45-pitch session. I don't think he's pitching in April. And David Ortiz still struggling. What was he, 0-4 or 4 Ks yesterday? Not good, but I bet he bounces back in Minnesota. Just a little bit. Anyway, you can see that game. Red Sox, the Twins, the Target Field opener at 4:10 p.m. Eastern Time on ESPN. Now let's get to the power rankings.
Power rankings.
That's it. Kind of disappointing. Power rankings, stack them up. Top 10, bottom 5. I've already done it and written it out. See, I even prepared for today's show. You kind of got to do that when you're alone. The Yankees are still the best team in baseball. I know they don't have the best record in baseball. You can view this however you want. I'm not making Toronto the number one team in baseball. I just won't do it. To me, the way I view power rankings is, who's the best team in baseball? That's it. Okay? Regardless of record. I mean, you're not going to take Pittsburgh. But at the same time, look who Toronto played. It's 1 week. They could easily lose 5 out of 6 this week. The Yankees, to me, are the best team in baseball. They showed up the last couple of days against a very good Rays team in their place. Yankees number one, Philadelphia number two. And I almost feel like, you know, until these guys get knocked off their perch a little bit, you know, they're the two best teams. Red Sox kind of got knocked off their perch a little. They did win their last two games. But I think maybe Jay's right a little bit. I mean, I don't know about this team.
Well, I don't get to hear that often, so please repeat what you just said.
I didn't say anything of the sort. I'll say this about Boston. I think Boston and Tampa Bay are very equal. All right. And before the season, I did pick Boston to win the wild card. I could easily see that beating Tampa Bay. But I still think these are two of the five best teams. I have Yankees number one, Phillies number two. I think St. Louis, despite what happened late last night, is number three. It's still a terrific team. They're like the Phillies. They could coast through their division. Number four, I'm making Minnesota. All right, everybody happy about that? Twins off to a good start. And boy, can they hit. And I have Tampa Bay ahead of Boston now. So it's Yankees, Philly, St. Louis, Minnesota 4, Tampa Bay 5. Boston is my number 6 team right now, so they're out of the top 5. I have Detroit 7, San Francisco 8, Oakland 9, and Colorado is number 10. Not a good first week for Colorado. And they're probably better than Oakland, but I'll say this about the Athletics. If they continue to get good pitching, and they get all their help, the relievers back, and they eventually wisen up and start playing Jake Fox to get some power in the lineup, I think Oakland's going to make some noise. You know what? I mean, I think that division, I think I overrated Seattle. I don't know, it's only 1 week, but, you know, already the Milton Bradley stuff is starting. And Cliff Lee, I didn't think he was going to be out a month. And the Angels had a bad first week. They're not in my bottom five by any means. But anyway, my top 10 has pretty much, I mean, what teams are in that top 10 that weren't a week ago? You know, I don't. Maybe just Oakland. Toronto's not my top 10. They're not one of the top 10 teams in baseball. Not after beating up on Baltimore.
You have the Giants in your top 10?
I do. Yes, if you were listening, they were number 8.
No, I meant.
Oh, before the season?
Yeah, before the season.
I probably wouldn't have. I probably would have. Well, I had Colorado as the only team in the NL West. St. Louis. I might have had Florida, maybe. Actually, I probably had Atlanta. And not a good first week for Atlanta. So I guess Atlanta is out and San Francisco's in. But, you know, that doesn't mean I think that they're going to change their wild card. I don't think a whole lot of surprises with the power rankings after 1 week. If you want to know the worst, I think it's right now it's Houston and Baltimore are the two worst teams in baseball. Houston's horrible. Horrible. I'm calling Houston dead last. I'm calling Baltimore second to last. But in a week, I think it'll be Baltimore because there's just not a whole lot to grasp onto there. And their schedule with the Yankees, Rays, and Red Sox right after each other. Man, in April, this could be an April for the ages for Baltimore. I mean, not like the one where they started like 0-21. What was that, 88, 87, something like that. I want to put the Dodgers in the bottom five. Can I really do that? All right, I'm going to do it. And I'm going to tell you why. The Dodgers are in my bottom five because, I mean, Russ Ortiz, Ramon Ortiz, Jeff Weaver, if there was anything that they didn't spend enough on in the offseason, it might have been middle relief, actually. I mean, Vicente Padilla has been awful in two starts. And I was wrong there, too. I actually thought Padilla would be okay. And maybe he still will be. But he didn't exactly face, you know, gargantuan lineups in the first week, and he was terrible. So how about that? I mean, Pittsburgh beat him up. Dodgers are in my bottom five, and then Kansas City and Cleveland, who will probably be there all year, are also in there. No Washington. You know, if you had to rank Washington versus the Mets right now, wouldn't you take Washington? I mean, they did well against the Mets in their place. Let's not overrate that. But bottom five, Houston, Baltimore, Dodgers, KC, Cleveland, Houston being the worst, and you heard my top 10. And that's that for the power rankings. And now, whether I have sound or not, I'm going to do the birthdays. I'm going to do it every day. Paul Aduca, happy birthday to you. Four All-Star games, really? Antonio Osuna, I remember him. DJ Carrasco, he has a job somewhere. Justin Ruggiano, the Tampa Bay prospect. Remember Mike McFarlane, the old Royals catcher? I'm basically just reading down here. Terry Harmon, who was a Phillies utility infielder in the 70s. I love that guy. He couldn't hit at all. He batted 233 in his career with a 604 OPS. He slugged 292 with four home runs in 547 games. I don't know why I like Terry Harmon. Maybe it was from the baseball cards or watching him play. You know, he didn't have to play very much. I mean, they had Bo and Schmidt on the left side of the infield. And at second base, you know, Dave Cash when I first started watching baseball. And then they had Sizemore, Ted Sizemore for a year. And then a Manny Trio when they won the World Series. Anyway, I like baseball. Vicente Romo, birthday today. Charlie Lau, the great hitting coach. Johnny Ananelli, young lefty, pitching the World Series, I think, for Brooklyn. And any Hall of Famers, Addie Jost, and Vic Willis. There you go. And our name from the past, Buster Hoover, born in 1863. I mean, other than Buster Olney, how many Busters do you get these days? Buster Douglas, I guess. All right, that's enough for that. And now it's time for the emails. It's a call to the pen.
Call to the pen. You've got email.
We do, and you can send your emails to baseballtoday@espnradio.com. Number one, David in Oahu, Hawaii. I so really want to go to Hawaii, and my wife wants to go to Hawaii. And you've never been to Hawaii, have you, Jay? Probably not. No. I want to go to Hawaii. I'm going to go to Hawaii. Get a co-host so I can go to Hawaii. David writes, I would like to make a quick comment regarding Matt Kemp, Dodger center fielder. I love Matt Kemp and all the other Dodgers, especially those that I had an opportunity to watch in Las Vegas when they played for the 51s. I must say I think Matt Kemp is overrated as a center fielder. Okay, so he loves him in the first paragraph, and he starts the second off by saying he's overrated. As a gold glove outfielder, you need to make the plays on balls hit into center field in the gap and off the wall, and I just don't see Matty making those. He makes routine outs, as he should. I remember other center fielders like Andrew Jones and Jim Edmonds' name, too, that would more times than not make those kind of spectacular catches on a routine basis. Also, I don't think he has the ability to nail the runner at home on a consistent basis. What is the historical criteria to make a good outfielder gold glove caliber? Am I asking too much? I love the show. Well, I'll tell you what, people, if you want to know who's a good outfielder, don't even look at the gold gloves. I'm not trying to rip those people. I mean, I'm just saying gold glove voting generally doesn't always have a lot to do with who is a really good outfielder. Some guys make it on name alone. You know, I mean, that's how I believe. I'm going to see if I can find last year's gold glovers and tell you what I think of them and how many of them really were, you know, really should have been gold glovers. Now, I've seen Matt Kemp quite a bit, and is he a gold glover? Probably not. Is he, you know, the thing about gold gloves also is I think there should be a left fielder and a center fielder and a right fielder, and there isn't, and I don't know why. I mean, you can't just take three center fielders. It doesn't work that way. It's like taking, you know, three second basemen saying, oh, well, one of them can play shortstop. Last year, Kemp was one of the outfielders. Michael Bourne and Shane Victorino were the other two, And I wouldn't have had Victorino on there either. I would have had Bourne on there. He's a terrific center fielder. I got to think a little bit about who the best outfielders are in the National League. And if Bourne is your center fielder, then you can't have Camp or Victorino. But Bourne is clearly, I think, clearly better. It's like the eye test. You watch it and you see who do you think is the best outfielder. You know, if you see them enough. I think I saw enough of Kemp and Bourne, and certainly enough of Victorino to know that. Beltran and Edmonds, who had been center fielders for years, and Andre Jones, none of them deserved it last year. But let me ponder that a little bit for a future show. I'm sure I'll come up with people that have been better outfielders. I'll tell you who the best outfielder in baseball right now is. It's Franklin Gutierrez. He basically saved the game over the weekend. I don't remember what day it was. But for David Ardsma, somebody hit a bomb out to center field, and Gutierrez just kind of jumps over the fence like nothing's happening and steals a home run away. That guy had one of the best outfield center field seasons of all time defensively. And again, metrics are what they are. But I watched enough Franklin Gutierrez last year to know he's an awesome center fielder. You want to see an enjoyable defensive team, watch the Mariners play, but especially in their outfield. Not when Milton Brawley's playing, but Ichiro in right field with his arm. Like, Ichiro should be a Gold Glove winner too. I think he wins it every year. I'm going to check the American League right now. But anyway, the question was about Matt Kemp and how do I view it? You can't just, like, Jim Edmonds for years would make the spectacular plays, you know, but he wouldn't, he'd make mistakes too. And you need an arm. Edmonds still has a decent arm. Ichiro has won the Gold Glove, I think, every year of his career in the States. And Torrey Hunter wins it every year too. And he's still pretty good too. So I don't have any problem with that. Anyway, what's the criteria? There is none. How about that? There is no criteria. Oh, I just got an email. No talk of the Yovani Gallardo extension in Friday's podcast. No, I didn't. But I do think he's worth it, okay, to get to answer your question, Jason, who just posted something, and I just saw the email as I'm doing the show, so now you know exactly what time it is. But anyway, I'll tell you this. Gallardo, that's not bad. $31 million, I think it was 4 years. I don't have any problem with that. It seems like a good deal to me. Let me see if it was 4 years, though. But, yeah, if you can see what smart teams that don't have a lot of money are starting to do, and they're not really starting. I mean, Tampa Bay has been doing it. Cleveland did it years back. Is 30, $30.1 million, 5-year contract. That's great. In 3 years, Gallardo making still, what, $6 million a year? He should be making 16. Great deal by Milwaukee. Yes, Gallardo got hammered the other day, but so what? He'll be fine this season. Next up on the emails, obviously I'm talking way too much. James in D.C., in your opinion, was it right for Baltimore Orioles fans to boo Mike Gonzalez in the home opener? This is a guy the Orioles signed for a decent amount of money to be reliable, and he was anything but his first three appearances this season. In one sense, I understand the argument that you don't boo your own player and that pitchers are people too. On the other hand, Orioles brass has been saying all season how they are tired of losing, that the rebuilding process is officially over, and that winning is expected now. If this is true, don't the Orioles fans have just cause to boo their closer for not getting the job done? Yes, James, of course they do. And I'll say I boo Phillies players when I go to games. I certainly booed Brad Lidge last season when I was a fan and not a journalist, and I can be both. I boo players of all sports. You pay your money to go to a game, and it's a lot of money, then you have the right to boo or cheer as you please, respectfully, okay, and properly. But booing Mike Gonzalez in the home opener? Yeah, if he blows the save, by all means. And now he's out as the closer. All that money, I mean, I'm not saying it's wasted. Now, the reason why Mike Gonzalez blew the saves is not because he got unlucky. His velocity's way down. He's easy to hit when his velocity's down. He's a lefty, so right-handers should have some fun with him. So I don't have any problem with that whatsoever. Yes. Was it right for Orioles fans to boo? Would I have done it on opening day? Probably not. But, if I was at the Phillies game today for their home opener and Cole Hamels gets pounded in the first inning, yeah, I'd probably boo. That's just the honest truth. And finally, Glenn Perkins, who enjoys listening to the show while commuting in Tokyo. I'm a big Seattle Mariners fan. They're known as Japan's team due to Ichiro, Jojima, Sasaki, and Hasegawa, who all played there, and also due to the location. What do you and average American baseball fans think of a real World Series or winners of baseball, South American, Japanese, and Korean League champions meeting for a best-of-five series, maybe in Hawaii, to come up with the real world champs? Several baseball executives are pushing the idea, but would USA fans feel okay about losing to Asian teams? Well, I'll tell you what. USA fans and teams probably would have more to lose than Asian teams, wouldn't they? I mean, it's kind of expected, like in the Olympics and stuff, that, you know, like the dream team for basketball, when the USA basketball team started losing, well, they just had more to lose than everybody else. Baseball, probably be the same thing. I think the major problem here would be money. How could you get people, you know, who wins the World Series? Say the Yankees win the World Series again. Well, do they want to play in another World Series in November? No. They don't. They've already accomplished their goal of winning the World Series. Do you want to take an All-Star team? No. You're talking about a real World Series with the baseball's champion. I can guarantee you the Yankees don't want to play any more baseball once they win their World Series. I don't think anybody does. You'd have to make it so financially rewarding, and even then, they make so much money. I mean, Mariano Rivera cares about playing another series and after he's already thrown 100 such innings, and he makes, you know, $15 million? No, they don't care. I don't think it's ever going to happen. I think you could do it. I mean, the WBC is pretty much what you've got there. It's not a World Series, but it's kind of like an Olympic-sized tournament, and I think it's fun. I don't know if the USA is ever going to win it, but it doesn't matter that much to me, too, if you've got the real world champs. How about that? But a good question, Glenn. And I'm just telling you how I feel. I don't think Americans would view it as like the Japanese. I think Japanese fans are like, yeah, we want our shot at the Americans to show we're just as good. And they've got some terrific players, you know, but, I don't think it'd be big here. That's it for the emails. You know where to send them to baseballtoday@espnray.com. Now we finish up with a view from third.
Almost home.
Taking a look at tonight's matchup.
This is the view from third.
All right, 12 games on the slate. The biggest one probably the ESPN game where the Red Sox are in Minnesota to open Target Field. You can read all about Target Field on ESPN.com's baseball page. Jim Capel with a terrific article. There's a video there about how the ballpark will play. I can tell you that I will be watching John Lester against Carl Pavano. I'll also be watching the Phillies with their home opener against Washington, Jason Marquis, Cole Hamels. But again, I'm just being honest, I'll be flipping back and forth and watching both of those games. Other games that are interesting. How about Luke Hochevar of Kansas City against Max Scherzer? Detroit off to a good start. They're 5-1 and 3-0 at home. The Cubs, 2-4, not off to such a great start. Ryan Dempster on the mound early in the afternoon for them. Indians, are they already going through the motions? What an awful way to lose on Sunday. Chris Perez, your closer. Pound it. Astros, winless at St. Louis. Adam Wainwright. Good luck, Astros. I mean, Wander Rodriguez on the mound. That's good. But Adam Wainwright is really good. So good luck to them, I say. Braves are out in San Diego. Jarred Jurgens and Kevin Correa. Two teams. I think the Braves are going to compete. I think they're going to be interesting. Athletics off to a very good start. Justin Dukeshire was terrible in his first outing. He'll face Ryan Rollins Smith. I expect Seattle to still be around. I think, you know, Oakland, if Oakland finished with more wins and losses, it would surprise me. If Seattle finished with more losses than wins, it wouldn't surprise me as much. How about that? I think Seattle can contend, and maybe I might even pick them once in a while. I think I still have the Angels winning that division, and I still think they will. I don't think the Angels are playing today. No, they're one of the teams that is not playing. How about those Blue Jays, 5-1? They finally head home and they face the White Sox and Jake Peavy. And it'll be Brian Talbot on the mound. Zito on the mound against Ross Ohlendorf. Pirates not very good. I think Zito's gonna have a good game here. And, that seems to be about it. And I've pretty much used up all my time again. And, overtime is the name of the game here on the Baseball Today show. Anyway, you know what to watch. Red Sox Twins on ESPN at 4:10 p.m. Eastern Time. And, let's just see, what that ballpark looks like. I think it's gonna play as a hitter's park, personally. Especially for guys like Joe Mauer in left field. But, you know, the other team gets to play there too. So, you know, the Red Sox right-handed hitters like Kevin Youkilis and Dustin Pedroia wouldn't surprise me one bit if they go yard today as well, especially against a guy like Carl Pavano, who is, of course, hittable, to say the least. And that'll pretty much do it. All right, that's it. Baseball Today is a wrap. Jay, have anything to say? Nope.
No.
No, he doesn't. That's a wrap. Monday, April 12th. We're done. We'll be back on Tuesday. Thank you for listening. Happy birthday to those of you out there celebrating your birthday. Watch baseball. It's going to be a fun day. I'll be back to talk about it all on Tuesday.
Thanks for listening to Baseball Today. For more baseball talk, be sure to check out Baseball Tonight, Monday through Thursday at 7 p.m. Eastern on ESPN Radio and ESPNRadio.com.
Yeah, that's what we've been looking for.